You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Age of Radio.
What's going on, everybody? We are back. This is episode 219 of the This Almost Didn't Happen This Week podcast because my computer was being a huge asshole. This is the Dark Windows podcast. My name is Kevin.
And I'm Kevin.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
So I want to say something super quick. I know we've probably said this before. Yes, we have a Patreon. It's great. It's awesome. If you guys can't afford to do Patreon or just don't want to, would you just do us a favor and not skip the ads in the episodes? Because that's kind of what, aside from Patreon, that's how our revenue works for this, is through ads. It doesn't matter how many downloads we get. It's all about how many fucking ads people listen to. So if you would just be kind and you don't even have to listen to them. Just let them run. Just yeah. Space out for 90 seconds or so. And once you hear us talking again, bam, snap back into it.
Sometimes, you know, it might be a good one. I mean,
it's a podcast ad, so who knows? You get about a 40% chance of it being something interesting.
Yeah, true.
But yeah, just if you could be so kind as to, you know, not skip them.
Yeah,
that'd be great. It'd be a super big help.
Speaking of podcasts, so I was listening to Old Gods of Appalachia. I played it from the beginning forward, and I'm on season 3 now. Getting close to being caught up. And yesterday I was sitting there listening to it while I was trying to rewrite a program for a security panel. And all of a sudden I started like talking about this other podcast. I'm like, wait a minute. I think someone on the group mentioned it.
Malevolent.
Malevolent.
I cut you off because I knew you were going to fuck that word up because you always do.
And I was going to say malevolent, but I was like, no, wait, that wasn't it.
No, maleficent.
As soon as you said the other one, I was like, oh, yeah, it's right.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay. So I started listening to it, and I'm like, this is pretty kind of fucking interesting.
Well,
I'm like, I might have to download it or subscribe to it and start listening to it.
Yeah. If you're looking for other shows, you should also check out Macabre Emporium, because they shouted us out on their last episode, and they're friends of the show, and they do a good job. Just, you know, don't be a bitch and listen to it.
Whoa.
It is really funny, though, to listen to Sarah just bust David's balls about being 40 like I do to you. It's kind of fun.
No, you bust my balls and say I'm like 100.
Well, because you were 40 like 5 years ago.
No. It was only 2.
Oh, sorry. It's almost time for your early bird dinner.
You got it.
So anyway, so you rolled what for this week?
Badass.
Excellent.
I had to think. I'm like, wait a minute. What was it again? So yeah. So if you happen to listen to the Patreon episode, I covered a badass. And it was Marine, because Kevin had covered the Marines.
We did a ton of Marine shit.
Yes. And because it was the Marine's birthday.
Goddamn right.
Well, I did a badass because it happened to be Veterans Day on Friday. So I was like, well, I got to cover badass for this episode, so I'm going to stick with Marines. So I have got 2 for you.
And one of them is not John Bass alone.
No.
I hope.
John Bass alone is not one of them.
Because that'd be a little repetitive.
I never heard of these two guys.
Okay.
First one is Corporal Joseph Vittori.
Oh, okay.
22 of Beverly, Massachusetts.
Yep.
Earned the Medal of Honor the night of the 15th to 16th September 1951
mm-hmm.
near Songnae-dong, Korea, where he was fatally wounded while fighting off an enemy breakthrough at a gap in his battalion's lines.
You got to give the Koreans a lot of respect, though, man. They are not afraid to just show off dong whenever they naming towns. They're just like, it's going to have a dong in it.
Yes, of course. You know,
it's just...
One dong, two dong, three dong, four.
And then if you're an AK...
Big dong, small dong.
If you're an AK fan, the Romanians will also just show you their dong, too.
They will.
So if you don't know what I'm talking about, look up Romanian dong. Mm. AK. Put AK in there somewhere, because if not, you're just going to get a really hairy dick. Hold on. Let me... continue. I'm just
going to... So he was the...
Source check that.
So he was the 19th Marine to earn the nation's highest decoration for heroism in Korea. Joseph Vittori was born the 1st of August, 1929, in Beverly, Massachusetts, where he attended high schools and worked on his father's farm until October 4th of 1946, when he began a three-year enlistment in the Marine Corps.
Look at that sweet pile of dong.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He completed recruitment training at Parris Island, South Carolina in 1946, served briefly at Norfolk, Virginia, and Brooklyn, New York Navy Yards, respectively, and was a member of the Marine Detachment aboard the USS Portsmouth from April to June of 1947.
Maritime, Marines, kind of interchangeable almost.
Yeah.
You know.
But, you know, he was a Marine, and he was part of a detachment.
He was a water soldier.
Yes.
Yeah.
He was then stationed at the Philadelphia Navy Yard until May of 1948, when he joined the 2nd Division Marine Division at Camp Lejeune in North Carolina.
Don't drink the goddamn water there. I've seen enough of the ads to know you don't drink the water at Camp Lejeune.
Yeah.
Because it'll give you... Fucking like
or something?
Mesothelioma or some shit like that.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
The herpes.
And guy I watch on YouTube, Angry Cops, also did, he talked about that, and he also talked about some, I want to say it was on the Nimitz, where they had a bunch of fucking jet fuel get, quote unquote, accidentally pumped into the potable water supply.
Oh.
Yeah, and dudes were just fucking drinking it and showering in it, so.
Nice.
I mean, I know there's Marines on board, so what did that do? Probably just made them stronger. Fucking giant mutant retards.
So, from January to May of 1949, he served with the 6th Fleet in the Mediterranean area.
Almost the same thing.
Oh, not really, but maybe.
Good food, though.
He again served at Camp Lejeune until the 3rd of October 1949, after being... in the 6th Fleet, when he was discharged. Returning to Beverly, Massachusetts, he worked for a year as a plasterer and bricklayer until enlisting in the Marine Corps Reserve on September 26th of 1950 for an indefinite tour of active duty. He was trained at Camp Lejeune again until January of 1951, when he arrived in Korea to join the company with which he was serving when killed.
Man, I would have just gone there for the barbecue, though.
Yeah. He had participated in the South and Central Korean campaigns, receiving his promotion to corporal on the 15th of June, 1951. So the action occurred on Hill 749.
It's always a goddamn numbered hill.
Yep. Where Corporal Vittori's company was assaulting well-entrenched Chinese communist positions. A vicious enemy counterattack drove back a forward platoon with heavy casualties, and Corporal Vittori, with two other volunteers from his reserve platoon, dashed into a hand-to-hand combat in the midst of swarming enemy to give the Marine company time to consolidate its position. Later, when a call went up for an automatic rifleman to defend an isolated heavy machine gun position on the flank of his company's sector, Corporal Vittori again volunteered, with heavy casualties leaving a 100-yard gap in the Marine lines at the position. He fought a single-handed battle to prevent an enemy breakthrough. Leaping from one side of the position to the other, He kept up a withering fire of over 1,000 rounds in 3 hours.
And, you know, the problem is you can't even just say it was Koreans he was fighting. Because it wasn't just Koreans. Because the Chinese throw a bunch of fucking dudes into Korea, too. And yep. I only know that because of MASH.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's a comedy show from the 80s. I don't give a shit. I learned history from fucking, you know,
yes,
Alan Alda.
Very true.
And Gary Berghoff.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. BJ Honeycutt. Can't remember the guy's name.
Me either. He made repeated trips through...
Hold on. Before we go too much further here. BJ or Trapper John?
BJ?
Okay. Cool. Because, like, Trapper John was fine, but BJ was way more fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course. And it was definitely Colonel Potter or Blake.
I liked both of them, but yeah, Potter, for sure.
I'll take Potter.
Yeah. I did like both, though.
And I liked it better when Radar was there versus yeah. without Radar.
Yeah. I like Charles Winchester, too. He was fun. Because he was just a cunt.
I'd rather him over old Ferret Face.
I like both. I like Frank Burns, but Charles was just, he was just such a twat.
He was. He was.
If you grew up in New England, you'll understand exactly why everybody fucking hated Charles Emerson Winchester III. Because he was just that dickhead. They said from Massachusetts, but that's a guy from Connecticut is what that is. Just fucking...
No, ugh. He's from Boston.
No, so I'm telling you, dickhead. Though. Yeah, sure, yes, he's from Boston, but he is based off a character from Connecticut. Like, down in the southern part of it where they can, like, drive into Long Island, that part of Connecticut where they're just enormous douchebags.
Mm.
Yeah, moneyed up. Yeah.
Okay, so this is pretty... I got a lot of stuff to go through. Well, so
it's a good thing we stopped and talked about MASH for 4 minutes then, huh?
So he made repeated trips through a heavy shell fire to replenish his ammunition, manned a machine gun after its gunner fell, and despite enemy penetration to within feet of his position, kept the enemy out of the breach in his company's lines until he was mortally wounded.
Jesus.
The next morning, the Marines counted almost 200 enemy dead in the area.
He weren't fucking around, was he? No.
In addition to the Medal of Honor, Corporal Vittori was posthumously awarded his second Purple Heart medal for wounds received in action. He was previously wounded on 9 June 1951 near Yanggu, Korea.
I like that Szechuan style, by the way.
Yes. And had been a property sergeant after leaving the field of hospital. After a week at the hospital, he had asked to rejoin his buddies in his old infantry platoon and was allowed to do so. So here is the complete citation for his actions.
Okay.
Okay. For
for conspicuous bullshit in the honor of gallantry.
Yes. For conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity.
Wow. Intrepidity.
Yeah, that yes. too. At the risk of his life above and beyond the call of duty while serving as an automatic rifleman in Company F in action against enemy aggressor forces, with a forward platoon suffering heavy casualties and forced to withdraw under a vicious enemy counterattack, as his company assaulted strong hostile forces entrenched on Hill 749, Corporal Vittori boldly rushed through the withdrawing troops with two other volunteers from his reserve platoon and plunged directly into the midst of the enemy. Overwhelming them in a fierce hand-to-hand struggle, he enabled his company to consolidate its position to meet further imminent onslaught. Quick to respond to an urgent call for a rifleman to defend a heavy machine gun position on the extreme point of the northern flank and virtually isolated from the remainder of the unit when the enemy again struck in force during the night. He assumed position under the devastating barrage and fighting a single-handed battle leapt from one flank to the other, covering each foxhole in turn as casualties continued to mount. Manning a machine gun when the gunner was struck down and making repeated trips through the heaviest shell fire to replenish ammunition. With the situation becoming extremely critical, reinforcing units to the rear pinned down under the blistering attack and foxholes left practically void by dead and wounded for a distance of 100 yards, Corporal Vittori continued his valiant stand, refusing to give ground as the enemy penetrated to within feet of his position. Simulating strength in the line and denying the foe physical occupation of the ground. Mortally wounded by the heavy machine gun and rifle bullets, while persisting in his magnificent defense of the sector, where approximately 200 enemy dead were found the following morning, Corporal Vittori, by his fortitude, stout-hearted courage, and great personal valor, had kept the point position intact despite the tremendous odds and undoubtedly prevented the entire battalion position from collapsing.
Battalion?
Yeah.
Yep.
I meant battalion.
Okay.
But that didn't sound right.
It's like, is it a platoon? Is it a battalion?
Yeah.
Is it a battalion of platoons?
His extraordinary heroism throughout the furious night-long battle reflects the highest credit upon himself and the U.S. Naval Service. His gallantry gave his life for his gallantly gave his life for his country. Okay, so these are the medals he was awarded.
Right.
Medal of Honor. World War II Victory Medal. Purple Heart. Combat Action Ribbon. American Campaign Medal, Korean Service Medal, National Defense Service Medal, Republic of Korea Presidential Citation, Republic of Korea War Service Medal, United Nations Service Medal, Marine Corps Presidential Unit Citation, Marine Corps Good Conduct Medal, Marine Corps Expeditionary Medal.
He weren't fucking around.
No, very much so not. So, that is Corporal Vittori in his full splendor.
Yeah, shit.
Now, before we go on the other one, I actually have some other names of some famous Marines. Some of these I did not know the Marines.
How many I know.
So, I know, you probably know a few. Drew Carey.
Yep.
Montel Williams.
Didn't know that one, actually.
Ed McMahon. Never knew that.
No, I guess not. I thought I did. No. No.
Harvey Keitel.
Yep.
Of course, Early Ermey.
The fucking Marine. As a matter of fact, our Marine Corps episode, he let us in before our music hit.
Yeah.
With the speech as they are graduating from basic.
Mm.
Yeah. You know, we are Marines. We're here to die.
Yes.
The Marine Corps will live on forever, and therefore you will live forever. Yes.
Rob Riggle.
Yep.
Shaggy.
The Catalina fucking wine mixer. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait, Shaggy, like the Jamaican singer Shaggy?
Yeah.
Huh, no shit.
Yep. Gene Hackman.
Yep, I knew that one.
Steve McQueen.
Nope.
Adam Driver.
Yep.
And this last one I know you know. Ted Williams.
Motherfucker. Yeah. He hit 406, and what did he do in the Corps? He was a pilot.
Yeah.
And I would hate to have been any fucking enemy that came across him, because, you know.
Yeah.
Teddy fucking ball game.
Exactly.
He will kill your ass dead.
Went to war, came back, fucking took up where he left off.
Yep. As legitimately, as much as I hate to say it, probably the second best Red Sox of all time. After the guy, when you look at him on paper, you go, if you didn't see the name at the top of it, you go, wow, this guy was fucking awesome. Then he had one bad thing happen, and he's the devil in New England for fucking 30 years.
Eh.
Because,
I don't know.
Bill Buckner had a fucking fantastic career with the Red Sox.
He did.
He had one fuck up. And he was sick when that happened. Did you know that?
No.
He was playing that game with a goddamn flu, and he fucking took a bad hop, and all of a sudden, he just, if he had walked down the streets of Boston, they'd have fucking tar and feathered him.
Yeah. It's crazy.
If it weren't for him, fucking Lenny Dykstra wouldn't have a World Series ring. Okay, and that guy is a crackhead.
Yeah.
Sure. The last headline I saw about him is he was digging through a dumpster behind a fucking fast food restaurant trying to find his false teeth. Because he accidentally threw them away. Because he is a fucking crackhead. Like, I would love to do an episode on him because he's a train wreck. God, he's so fun.
Crazy.
Or just go listen to Crime and Sports. They fucking murdered it. And then they actually got the motherfucker on the show. And he's like, yeah, no, you guys are right. I'm a fucking asshole. The whole time, it's like, holy shit, that's awesome.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
All right. So here is the second badass Marine that I chose for this episode.
Do we want to do a break?
I'll do a break in just a minute.
Okay.
Okay. So the gentleman that I chose to cover is Mitchell Page.
Uh-huh.
He was born on 31 August 1918 in...
The only Marine known to have been born in 1918 that still fought in the Battle of Belleau Wood. Just a wee little fucking 3-month-old out there with a shotgun. Just
yeah,
blowing the spiked helmets off these fucking German idiots.
Mm. Okay.
Not so true.
He was born in Charleroi. I don't know. Pennsylvania. Town in Pennsylvania. I don't know.
It's some Amish bullshit.
And graduated in 1936 from McKeesport High School in McKeesport, Pennsylvania. He enlisted in the Marine Corps on 1 September 1936 at Baltimore, Maryland, completing his boot camp training at Parris Island, South Carolina. In November of 1936, he was transferred to Quantico, Virginia. Later, he served aboard the USS Wyoming as a gunner, and took part in maneuvers via Panama to San Clemente Island off the coast of California. After that, he would be sent in February 1937 to Mare Island Naval Yard for guard duty. And 2 months later, he was ordered to Cavia in the Philippines, Philippine Islands. While on Cavia, he became a member of the All-Navy Marine baseball team, which gained prominence throughout the island and the Orient. He served in China from October of 1938 to September 1939. During his tour, he guarded American property during the famous Tenzin flood.
Can't be that famous. I've never heard of it.
Yeah. He left North Korea and returned to the U.S. in 1940 for guard duty at the Brooklyn and Philadelphia Naval Yards. In September 1940, he rejoined the 5th Marines at Quantico, and the following month participated in maneuvers at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, and Cool Bra? Yeah.
Sure. Cool story, bra.
Cool Bra, Puerto Rico. In March 1941, he was transferred back to the United States and ordered to New River, North Carolina to help construct and prepare a new training base for Marines, which later became Camp Lejeune. In April 1942, 5 months after the Japanese surprise attack on Pearl Harbor, elements of the division deployed to forward bases in Samoa and New Zealand. He earned the nation's highest decoration for heroism, the Medal of Honor, during the campaign for the Guadalcanal in October 1942.
And I can say this with confidence. When those guys landed on Samoa, they had the worst hair on the island. Because we've seen Samoans. They have beautiful fucking hair.
Like, of course.
The only people that make me jealous... You know, with, you know, Troy Polamalu with his fucking commercial grade beautiful hair.
Yes.
God damn. I'm gay for that man's hair. And it's starting to go gray a little bit, and you're like, fuck yeah, dude. Looks good, but yeah, great fucking hair on the Polynesians in general.
So when he made a desperate lone stand against enemy Japanese after they had broken through the lines and killed or wounded all the Marines in his machine gun section. Now, here is the lead up and the events that led to him getting the Medal of Honor. So the Japanese, so this is verbatim of everything, like what happened. Okay. Because I was like, well, I could write this all down, you know, put it in my own words, but I'm like, you know what? Why not go from like the horse's mouth and just, you know, everything that led up from it, right. Led up to it. It's just, let's just, you know, cover it because it deserves it. So actually before we get into this, let's take a break.
Oh, you blue balling son of a bitch.
Hey, it'd be okay. And we'll come back and we'll finish it off.
You can't cough if we're going to take a break.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Got your happy price, Priceline.
We're back.
Oh, whoops. Okay. So the Japanese began probing the American perimeter between Longa Point and the Tanura River in late August. The Allies won the Battle of the Tanura on August 21st. As well as a large-scale battle known as Edson's Ridge, fought over 3 days in mid-September. Japanese reinforcements arrived at Guadalcanal via the Tokyo Express, a name the Americans gave to the troop landings conducted by the Japanese destroyers, transports, and submarines. The landings were made at night, so the vessels could not be intercepted by American aircraft. The Americans expanded their perimeter in the first 2 months on Guadalcanal.
Guadalcanal. Guadalcanal makes it sound like it's like...
Okay.
Yeah. Fucking Guadalajara Canal.
The Americans expanded...
That's fine. Keep it.
Americans expanded their perimeter in the first 2 months on Guadalcanal. Guadalajara. Whatever. I don't fucking care.
Guadalupe Canal. That's where Ulysses S. Grant fought in the
Americans expanded their perimeter in the first 2 months on Guadalcanal. On the west side, the Marines clashed twice with the Japanese in the Manticou River sector. The actions in late September and early October were known, respectively, as the second and third battles of the Manticou. It was imperative that the Marines hold the Manticou line, which included the sandy beaches along the coast, because it was the only possible route of advance from the west by which the Japanese forces could employ tracked and wheeled vehicles. The sector was situated for about 4 miles west of the Henderson field.
Not that their fucking tractor wheeled vehicles were any good. So, I'm sorry, you said Henderson Field. Okay. So this is all going on at probably right around the same time that our new old buddy John Bassalone was there just kicking the fucking dicks in on the Japanese. Yeah, I kind of figured as such.
So by mid-October, two Marine battalions, the 1st, 7th, and the 2nd, 5th, held high ground on the east side of the Manticou near the coast. The Americans intercepted a Japanese map indicating that three Japanese divisions would attack the perimeter from three separate directions. Although the Americans spotted enemy forces building up to their west and south, there was no indication that they would be attacked from the east. Colonel... Okay.
That good, huh?
Well, I'm trying to, like... I've read it, and I want to... And I want to make sure I pronounce it correct.
If not, he's dead. So I'm pretty sure nobody gives a shit.
Colonel Akinosuko Oka, commander of the reinforced 124th Infantry Regiment of the Imperial Japanese Armies.
Oh, he's fucking Japanese. Fuck him if you mispronounced his name.
Well, he was the 35th Brigade, received orders on October 9th, to cross to the east bank of the Manticou, attack the two Marine battalions defending the river line from the flank and rear, and secure the high ground on the east side of the Manticou for further operations.
Good luck, bitch. There's Marines on that side.
Exactly. When the Americans spotted Japanese infantry massing in the thickly wooded ravine south of the Marine position on the Manticou, on the morning of October 24th, Vandegrift ordered the 2nd 7th on October 25th to conduct a forced march from its position near Henderson Field to defend an east-west ridgeline against Oka's expected attack. Sergeant Page and his men fell in with the rest of the battalion as they tramped rapidly to their new position. The 2nd Battalion arrived as its assigned position at its assigned position in the early evening of October 25th. The Marines found themselves under bombardment not only by howitzers on the west bank of the Manticou, but also Japanese destroyers positioned offshore. The three rifle companies were deployed from west to east, with E Company holding the lower of the two hills to the west, G Company on the saddle to the center, and F Company on the higher hill to the east. Page's machine gun section set up between companies F and G. Page personally positioned the guns to protect Company F to his left and Company G to his right. After the guns were in place, he strung the tripwire. The Marines soon began lobbing mortar shells into the ravine to inflict as many casualties as possible on the Japanese foot soldiers. The Japanese struck Hanekin's battalion at 3 a.m. on October 26th. Company F was hardest hit. Vicious hand-to-hand fighting erupted in the battalion's front line as the Japanese tried to dislodge them from the ridge. When a Japanese soldier thrust his bayonet into Page's head, the sergeant...
Oh, his head? Jesus.
At his head.
Oh my God, I was like, holy fuck, dude, he got stabbed in the fucking head.
No.
I didn't see that coming.
The sergeant threw up his left hand to block it. The razor-sharp blade cut deeply into his hand, nearly severing his finger. In a lightning move, Page drove his K-bar into the attacker's neck, killing him instantly.
Yeah, fucking right, because the blade is 8.5 inches long and, I don't know, and probably it's about 2 inches wide. Not like wide, not thick, but wide. I've got a K-bar in the gun safe, and they are fucking sturdy.
Yeah.
So lucky he didn't drive it through the top of his goddamn skull.
Yeah. During the fight, the two Marine rifle companies positioned behind Page's platoon withdrew a short distance, isolating and exposing Page's machine gunners. The repeated charges by the wild-eyed, bayonet-wielding Japanese took a heavy toll on the 2nd Battalion in the hours before sunrise. When one of the machine guns was damaged beyond repair, Page braved enemy fire to bring up another one. The members of Page's section fought valiantly, but the Japanese managed to kill or severely wound all of them in the platoon except Page. In the third hour of the battle, Page ran back and forth from one machine gun to the next in the darkness to deceive the Japanese into believing that there were still a lot of Marines on the ridge.
Ah, he's doing some shifty American stuff instead of shifty Japanese stuff.
Yes.
We're not used to that in this show.
Of course.
Because apparently the Japanese are the only ones that can be shifty, if you've ever noticed. It's never like, the Soviets were never shifty, the Germans were never shifty.
Italians can be.
No, Italians are greasy. They slip through the cracks.
They're shifty, too.
I think it's the eyes that makes the Japanese shifty.
Okay.
I think so.
So the Japanese ultimately succeeded in driving Company F from its position.
Yeah, they paid the goddamn price for it, though, didn't they?
As the Japanese swept past him, Page remained at one of the guns. He swiveled to the left and right, firing into shadowy figures that swept past his position.
He butt-fucked the Japanese on their way through.
Yes.
Yes!
The first flicker of dawn occurred after 3 hours of frenzied combat. The light of morning revealed a landscape blanketed with the dead and wounded bodies of American and Japanese soldiers. A lull settled over the battlefield at sunrise as the Japanese officers rallied their men for a final assault. Page said the Japanese knew the lay of the land east of the Manticou River.
No shit.
Very well, and had a clear plan in mind when they made their attack.
I mean, when you've been dug into the place for fucking months,
yeah.
And then we show up and we're like, hey, it's a nice island you got here. Be a damn shame if we killed all you and took it and then started landing airplanes here. Yeah, they probably knew their way around a little bit, I'd say. You know.
So, this is a quote directly from him. They were hoping that they could catch the Marines someday in a position like this where they could break through with enough people. There were no obstacles behind him, he said. Adding that it was just a straight shot through the coconut trees right down to the beach road.
Yeah, straight shot, except, oh shit, there's guys here.
So Page devised a plan for deceiving the Japanese into believing that American reinforcements were on hand. He draped two cartridge belts over his shoulder, and with one cartridge belt in his Browning machine gun, he unclamped it. Cradling his machine gun in his left hand, he charged down the hill. Before he did so, he shouted, "Fix bayonets and follow me!"
Fuck you!
To the Marines of the Company G to his right rear. Page then charged down the hill with his Browning.
Fix my nuts, I'm staying here.
Down the hill toward the Japanese, firing his Browning machine gun from the hip as he went. Page spotted a Japanese officer and his guard standing up in the kunai grass.
Oh, that guy's going to get fucking dead.
Yeah, below him. He said, quote, "He was firing at me as I was charging at him. He had probably as many as 18 men with him. As I bounced down the hill, I raked them with... As I bounced down the hill, I raked them, and they all fell over." The officer, though, remained standing. The Japanese officer had exhausted his ammunition, Page recalled. He threw his revolver to the deck, and he started to pull his samurai sword as I approached him from about 4 feet away. One burst of the machine gun came right down his face and chest as the samurai sword started out. It hit the sword and the scabbard. At the same time, the Marines to his right rear came charging down the hill with fixed bayonets. The executive officer of the 27 had scrapped together rear echelon troops, and along with Marines from Company G, the Americans launched a counterattack.
Fuck your ancestors. Here's 30 caliber rounds.
Driving the Japanese back into the jungle. By that time, they knew the Japanese attack had been defeated and were yelling with joy. "It was the greatest sight I have ever seen in my life," Page said. 98 Japanese dead lay on the ridge. 98 Japanese dead lay on the ridge and another 200 in the ravine. The Japanese decided in late December to withdraw from Guadalcanal.
That's probably a good idea.
The extraction was handled skillfully, in the first week of February 1943, as many as 10,000 Japanese soldiers were loaded onto destroyers and removed to safety. During the Battle of Guadalcanal, the Japanese lost 25,000 men.
Yeah,
compared to 1,700 American dead.
Yeah, and then we just finished chasing them across Southeast Asia, just fucking trading victories and defeats with them for the next couple years.
So after Guadalcanal was secured in February 1943, Page was promoted to lieutenant and transferred to Australia. Van der Graaf presented him with the Medal of Honor on May 21st, 1943. Now, he would later on become colonel.
Yeah, fair enough.
Before he retires. So this is the actual citation for his Medal of Honor, okay? For extraordinary heroism and... Oh, blah, 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 blah. Okay, let's get to the meat and potatoes.
Because there's a lot of words in here that I don't want to say again.
It's just
because,
like,
I can't.
No, it's just a lot of fucking... It's like, whatever.
These are always fucking dry anyway. You know?
Yeah.
It's more fun to find, like, an account of someone who witnessed the whole thing or the person that did it.
Yeah.
Because, like, so, you can look at, like Roy Benavidez, for example. You can look at his and go, wow, that's cool. Then you listen to his side of the story and go, that was fucking crazy, dude. Yeah. Like...
So for extraordinary heroism and
no, just get to the fucking good part.
Yes, conspicuous
coniferous.
Yes, coniferous gallantry.
Those are so coniferous would be like your pine trees that drop needles instead of leaves.
Yes.
So
for extraordinary heroism and conspicuous whatever. Fuck it. Combat against Japanese forces on the Solomon Islands this 26th October 1942. When the enemy broke through the line directly in front of his position, Sergeant Page, commanding a machine gun section with fearless determination, continued to direct the fire of his gunners until all his men were either killed or wounded. Alone against the deadly hail of Japanese shells, he fought with his gun, and when it was destroyed, took over another, moving from gun to gun, never ceasing his withering fire against the advancing hordes, until reinforcements finally arrived. Then, forming a new line, he dauntlessly and aggressively led a bayonet charge, driving the enemy back and preventing a breakthrough in our lines. His great personal valor and unyielding devotion to duty were in keeping with the highest traditions of the U.S. Naval Service. A complete list of Colonel... Okay, so that was his citation.
Right.
So now, this is a complete list of his decorations that he would be awarded. Okay? The Medal of Honor, the Purple Heart, the Presidential Unit Citation, the Good Conduct Medal, the China Service Medal, the American Defense Service medal with base clasp, the Asiatic Pacific Campaign medal with two bronze stars.
I've literally never heard of that one.
Me either.
Huh.
The American Campaign medal, the World War II Victory medal, the Naval Defense Service medal, the Korean Service medal, the Marine Corps Reserve Ribbon, and the United Nations Service Medal.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fucking medals.
So that is Mr. Page and his fucking balls out fucking charge down a hill with a Browning to be
that
like...
That was fucking something, man.
Yeah.
Like...
Both those guys, I mean, both of them just fucking going from gun to gun.
Yeah.
You know... Keeping enemy back. I mean, one ended up dying, but...
And he taught that one fucking officer, like, the golden rule. You don't bring a knife to a gunfight.
Yes.
Like, so they have this whole theory with, you know, if you can defeat someone with a firearm with a knife if you're within 20 feet of them and they haven't drawn it yet.
Yeah.
When you're trying to draw your goddamn 4-foot-long sword, out of your fucking family's ceremonial antique scabbard or whatever, and you don't want to fuck that up. And homeboy's already got a bead on you at like a yard and a half away with a belt-fed 30 caliber machine gun. You're going to lose that fight. I don't care how fucking badass samurai bullshit you are. You're going to die. He just got fucking shot from sternum to forehead, apparently. Bad day to be him, I guess. Yeah. But if he'd survived it, he would have had to stab himself anyway. So.
True.
You know, and there wouldn't have been anybody around to cut his head off. It would have just been painful. But, you know, it sucks to be Japanese in World War II, I guess. It's probably not bad now. I mean, they have PlayStations and shit.
Exactly.
You know.
For sure.
A dwindling population because none of them fuck, which is sad. But, it's not our fault.
Maybe it is.
You know what? No, it's not. But what is our fault is the fact that we have a goddamn Patreon page.
Oh, it is?
It is. And we release a new episode every week, which we're getting ready to record that one immediately after that. I know we've done a lot of badasses and history, and we got more history next week. So I figured just to fucking mix it up, we do another badass for Patreon because this dude's story is fucking wild. But if you want to hear it, give us $5 or give Patreon $5 and then they give us like $3.79 or whatever it is per person.
Yes.
And then you can hear this shit. So for whatever, you know, $5, or if you're in fucking England, it's like whatever your bullshit money is with your dead queen on it, or in Canada, it's like $7. I don't fucking know. Anyway, give it a listen. It's good. Even if you do it for a month and you listen to all everything and you go, okay, cool. And then come back in a couple months when we have more shit, that's fine too. So that's Patreon. There's also this really cool headphone company we've been buddies with for quite some time, Studio. Go over to studio.com and grab whatever you want. Speakers, headphones, earbuds. They've got wired and wireless earbuds. Throw them in your cart. Put in Dark Windows 15 at checkout for 15% off your entire order. And, social media shits.
All the shits.
Facebook, Instagram, whatever. Leave us a review. Don't leave us a review. I don't really care at this point. It doesn't matter anymore because nobody leaves us reviews. And that's fine.
Oh, yeah. We got a rule. We got a rule. You got a rule.
Yeah, we'll see what you're doing next time in like 3 weeks. Because we're not going to be here next week because we both got family coming in for Thanksgiving. So we're going to take the time off.
Yes.
So.
I mean,
so
maybe. There might be a possible.
We're still going to do Patreon. So what I was planning on doing was grabbing maybe, if you're cool with it, grab one of our old Patreon episodes and giving that to the world for free.
Okay.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. And
I love it.
If you don't like it, fuck you. Anyway, roll in for your punk ass Kevin.
Paranormal.
You gotta do some ghostly shits. Cool.
Paranormal.
So, with that being said, just because you can't see out into the dark doesn't mean that the dark can't see into you. Goodbye. Again.
Adios.
Forever this time.
Though.